While the school and its pupils thrived inside the court, much was changing on the estate, causing new challenges for the Croom Estate trustees. For instance, in 1959, a new motorway was built which cut the estate in two. John Masters recalls the original plan for the M5, while Mary Evans says it ruined the woods where she used to walk.
The M5 now goes on the Sevenstoke side of High Green, but it was pegged out before the war with red pegs, and it went the Croom Court side of High Green, nearer to the court. So whether anyone had sort of complained when they knew it was there, and after the war, they'd reconsidered and they'd put it the other side to get it farther away from the court.
Prior to when it being built, they came along and marked all the trees in the wood with white rings, and those were the ones to be felled. And they actually felled them in the spring, which was a really bad time because all the birds were nesting. And my little brother went along and tried to rescue all these birds and birds' nests that he could find. Obviously he couldn't. By then the Air Force had left, and the construction company, or Monks, took over the Air Force base as their main depot. And the lorries used to thunder around the lanes and cause so much... I mean, they were always going into ditches, and trees were knocked down and hedges were ripped out, and it was a real mess. And of course the wood was never the same again, and it stopped us from being able to walk through it as we always used to go into the park.
The rest of the Defford Aerodrome land was returned to farming. Not an easy feat, as Sir Jerry Wiggin recalls.
Croom Estate advertised the tenancy of Croom Farm, which was a home farm to Croom Court, and the land that was known as Defford Aerodrome, which had been Defford Common before the war. This airfield had innumerable sort of panhandles, like a frying pan, where the aeroplane would come off the main runway or the taxiway, and there was a big circle where it could turn around and be fitted out. And when it came to farming the land, these circles were a damn nuisance. And we tried digging them up, but it wasn't very good the soil after it had spent 30 years under concrete. But we managed.
This was a bit before my time. I arrived at Croom in 1967 and was appointed agent for the Croom Estate Trustees 2 years later. The next decades saw more changes in the ownership of the estate, which are worth me explaining. In the 70s, the 11th Earl, Bill Coventry, became entitled to over half of the estate, and in 1981, he sold much of his interest to Sun Alliance and London Assurance Company Limited. This was a time when the nature of the park changed dramatically. Farming had to become more profitable, so the park was ploughed up. Then a devastating disease ravaged the elm trees, which were felled, changing the views and opening up vistas. But elsewhere on the estate, wildlife was thriving. Colin Adams used to camp by the lake at weekends.
We used to have some really nice times there. We used to go virtually every weekend for many years. And we used to sleep down the bottom in a two-man tent. There was a wonderful array of wildlife there. For instance, down by the lake that they've dug out and altered, there used to be herons there. There used to be as many as 50 herons. It was absolutely amazing, especially in March when they had built the nests. And the noise they used to kick up was unbelievable. I never forget going on a very windy day, and the trees was really blowing, and I was just amazed how they even stopped up there, the nests and everything. Another thing I remember seeing, as you're looking from the house down the lake, there's a bank, a big high hill on the left-hand side. There used to be a lot of hares there. They used to have had the mad march hare, and they used to stand on their hind legs and box. And you'd literally see sort of six or seven pairs of hares just standing on their hind legs, boxing each other and that.
Like Colin, most of our interviewees recall Croom's wildlife with pleasure. But the abundant bird life did cause the occasional problem, as Leonard Edwards recounts.
There was one particular night when about 8 o'clock at night, all the electricity went off. So I went into the office and telephoned the MEB. They said they hadn't got a clue that half of Worcestershire was out, and they hadn't got a clue where the fault was. I went back about 2 hours later and met one of the sisters called Sister Hilda. She then informed me she'd seen a bright flash. I said, oh, a flash, where was that? She said, oh, down by the lake. Well, I went down to the lake and I shone my torch round, and I noticed the cables were missing between the transformer and the first post on the other side of the lake. And it turned out that a swan had flown down the lake, gone through the cables, brought them down, killed itself, and we had for the rest of the night the electricity board working with lorries and goodness knows what from Home Farm, trying to put the cables back across the lake.
Nature had all but taken over in the boathouse cover around the lake. You could not have walked along the paths that are there today, and the ornamental buildings, statues, urns and bridges had practically disappeared into the undergrowth. Enid Smith remembers exploring in the 70s.
Well, it was, of course, it was very overgrown, and inside the island building there, it was a lot of graffiti there, you know, people had all carved their names and numbers and things on it. But it was still a lovely place to sort of ramble around. You had no idea the size of the lake at that time, you know, it was so overgrown, and the island as well.
The Croom Trust secured grant aid to renovate the dilapidated Georgian garden buildings. In return, the public were allowed to wander around the park on Wednesdays. This is how some of our interviewees first experienced the wonders of Croom, including Janet Williams and her family.
We arrived just after the monuments and the bridges had all been repaired on the estate, and there was a note in the paper to say it was going to be open every Wednesday for a shilling, I think we paid, to go in. And that was fine because it meant, it was in walking distance of home. You couldn't see from one side of anywhere to one side of anywhere else. Solid brambles and elderberries and sycamores. But the Croom estate, they had to keep rides through it clear so that we could walk round.